So welcome back. So again, my name is Eve, and this is my friend Kent. And Kent, like me, is a longtime Buddhist practitioner and a musician. And so for about the last 5 years, Kent and I have been playing this Dharma music together for sanghas all around California. And James asked me to come here last week, so I called, and I said, sure, but I was so busy, I forgot to call Kent, so I called Kent last night. I texted him and said, Kent, you free? He said, all right. So he's here, so yay, thank you for being here. All right, so to help us settle in, I'm going to start by singing you a song that comes from community in France called Plum Village, and the leader of that community is Thich Nhat Hanh. If you haven't heard of him, he's a wonderful monk in his 80s, Buddhist monk in his 80s from Vietnam, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work for ending the violence in Vietnam, and now lives in France because he was exiled from Vietnam for his work there. So he has long teachings and beautiful books, and he's a beautiful speaker. He also gives short little teachings, which are called, in the Zen tradition, are called gathas. This is one of Thich Nhat Hanh's gathas put to music. And you'll hear the line, in the ultimate I dwell. In the ultimate I dwell. And I understand that to mean in this mysterious, miraculous present moment. We come away from the thinking mind and drop into the body. We can discover that we live in something that's much more ultimate than what the mind is usually aware of. This just goes like this. I have arrived. I am home. In the here and in the now, I have arrived. I am home. In the here and in the now, I am solid. I am free. I am solid. I am free. In the ultimate I dwell. In the ultimate I dwell. I have arrived. I am home. In the here and in the now, I have arrived. I am home. In the here and in the now, I am solid. I am free. I am solid. I am free. In the ultimate I dwell. In the ultimate I dwell. So what I want to talk about tonight is unconditional self-love and the Brahma-viharas. And I'm going to begin that by asking you to raise your hand if you experience unconditional self-love.
Always?
Most of the time. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, unconditional self-love, accepting ourselves as we are, without a critical voice, without self-doubt or self-blame or self-criticism. I'm really interested in this because I think it's a really important pathway to freedom. And in Buddhist practice, there is a really simple way to walk into this kind of experience, and it's called the Divine Abodes, four places where we can practice to experience freedom. It's sometimes taught that we find freedom through concentration and insight. But John Peacock, who is a scholar, a longtime scholar of Pali and Sanskrit and Buddhist text, in his study, he finds over and over the Buddha saying that it's also possible to find freedom through these divine abodes. So what are they? There's four of them, and they're called loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. Loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. So what I'd like to do for you tonight, rather than talking about these four qualities and how we can practice them in our lives, I'd like to sing for you about them. And I want to begin with a song that I wrote called Simple Truth. I wrote it for James's Awakening Joy class. James, the regular teacher for this group, leads a class called Awakening Joy, and for 10 consecutive months, he will teach on a different topic for awakening joy in our lives, and he has singers come to his different classes. And once, about 2 or 3 years ago, one of the classes I was assigned to come sing was on the topic of self-love. And the only song that I know about self-love is Whitney Houston's song, The Greatest Love of All. And that one, I cannot, I mean, Whitney's got that one, I cannot sing that one. So right about the time that James asked me to come sing about self-love, I had just completed my second loving-kindness retreat, 8-day retreats where for 16 hours a day you practice sending wishes of loving-kindness to yourself and others. After the first 8-day retreat, I told my teacher that I found it much easier to send thoughts of loving-kindness, of well-wishing to others than I did toward myself. So when I returned a few months later to do my second metta loving-kindness retreat, metta is the Pali word for loving-kindness, my teacher said, spend the whole 8 days sending loving-kindness to yourself. And so I did that, and I encountered various obstacles, but when I was really fully there, fully getting how lovable I am and fully wishing myself well, what I noticed was two things: the amount of ease and peace I felt, and how much I loved everybody else too. How there's really no difference. When I'm not able to fully love myself, I'm not able to fully love others. And the moment I fully love myself in all, just as I manifest in each moment, then I love everybody else too. It's a beautiful experience. So I just come home from that. James asked me to sing this song. I wasn't going to be singing Whitney. So I wrote this, and it's called Simple Truth. Two, three, one. There are two choices. I can wait for all these voices to tell me I have made it, or I can love myself the way I am, the way I see it. There are two choices: try to do it their way, or find my own rejoicing music and play. I've been given a responsibility to love myself like I would love a child, chaotic, wild, and turning, building bridges, bridges burning. Just as I am, to love me. Maybe self-hatred protects me until the day no one rejects me. If I reject myself first, your coldness might not hurt as much. Maybe if I work harder, try more, do more, faster, longer, the day will come when I feel loved by everyone. I've been given a responsibility to love myself like I love trees. Okay when branches crack and fall, no striving, no have-tos at all. The sparkling green that breathes me just as I am loves me. No, I do not have it all together. I never have, and I never will. And I know that you don't have it all together either, 'cause nothing here was made that way. We're all falling, we're all flying, we're all playing, we're all dying. We've been given a responsibility to love ourselves like we love freedom, using courage just to see the simple truth of you and me. Love looks like humble gratitude, like endless forgiveness. Just as we are, 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 just as we are. The way I see it, there are two choices. We can wait for all these voices to tell us we have made it, or we can love ourselves as we are. So, yeah, when we finish a song, if you want to twinkle, that's very sweet. But we won't clap here in the sanctuary. But thank you. So that's what I'm talking about, is like, okay, so I'm aware, I've been aware since I was a kid about my various wackinesses and imperfections, but the question isn't making those go away. The question is holding the whole thing in love. That's what loving kindness requests of us. And that's what the practice is. Not waiting to love ourselves until we're something that's kind of got it, you know, kind of something else than we are right now. I'm a big fumbler and bumbler, and if I just thought that that wasn't okay, I wouldn't be able to take another step in this life. I have to be okay with how it is. This is a poem from Mark Coleman, who is a teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center. In his teaching, he often will take his students outside, which is the way the Buddha actually practiced. doing a lot of this loving kindness and this coming into the present moment practice out with the trees and the water and the grasses. And I think that's a really good place to work with these. There was a meditation master from Thailand, Ajahn Buddhadasa, who came and worked with Western students for a while and then said to some of the other teachers there at Insight Meditation Center, this is in the 70s, he said, oh my gosh, take these Western practitioners, put them out in nature, and just have them do loving kindness practice. That's what they need. So we need to come back to the earth and to getting that we're part of the earth and we're just as beautiful and miraculous as a hillside. And a hillside, we don't need a hillside like to be all smooth, right? I don't need to be all smooth physically or in my personality. So this part, this is from Mark Coleman. If you would grow to your best self, be patient, not demanding, accepting, not condemning, nurturing, not withholding, self-marveling, not belittling, gently guiding, not pushing and punishing, for you are more sensitive than you know. Humankind is as tough as war, yet delicate as flowers. We can endure agonies, but we open fully only to warmth and light. And our need to grow is fragile as fragrance, dispersed by storms of will, to return only when the storms are still. So accept, respect, attend your sensitivity. A flower cannot be opened with a hammer. And I think that's so important, you know. How many times do we try to open ourselves or our loved ones or our children with a hammer, an emotional, verbal hammer? And when has that ever worked for anybody? It's never worked for me. I hate that. It closes my heart right up, whether it's coming from externally or inside my own head. James gives out these little, if you take his Awakening Joy course, then online there are these little cards that he prints out each month for each topic. So on the topic of self-love, one of the cards that James sends out says, a truly wise and loving heart lets go of the need to be perfect. I want to, before we move on to, I'll say a little bit more about metta and then we'll move on to compassion, but I want to just read a quote from the Buddha for you on the topic of self-love. Because in our culture, it's often considered narcissism or egocentrism or something. Like we're taught to be autonomous and independent and persistent and a lot of good qualities, kind of John Wayne-ish sometimes. But self-love isn't necessarily, I mean, some of us get that and thank goodness for that, but a lot of us don't. The Buddha said, I visited all quarters with my mind, nor found any dearer than myself. Self is likewise to every other dear. Who loves oneself will never harm another. And that's the piece that says, well, yeah, okay, we're all dear to ourselves on some level, but it's not about some kind of crazy selfishness, because if we really love ourselves authentically as we are, we get how tender everybody else is too, and we would never hurt anybody, never intentionally hurt anybody, because everybody's equally miraculous. So, if you're a newcomer, I want to encourage you to, if you pursue this path, if this is a path of interest to you, what we do here is we come into the present moment, and there's a lot to say about how incredible that is. And what an act of self-love that is, just to come into the present. So we do that, and we can sit, and we can get really concentrated. We have these wonderful insights, and that's all really, really great. But it's also, that's huge, huge. But also, the whole path of loving kindness is really, really beautiful. And so if you're a newcomer, I want to encourage you to look into that as well. And there are beautiful practices with phrases. May I be happy, may I be safe, may I be healthy, may I be at ease. And you say them, and it just like rewires the brain after a while. You say it for yourself and others. So just want to note that, to encourage you to pursue that if you're interested. So, but there are four of these divine abodes. So metta, loving kindness, is the first, loving ourselves as we are. And then the second is when this loving kindness energy meets suffering, which it will, because suffering happens. And that's just the deal here, because we live in an impermanent world. Things come and they go. And sometimes when they go, that's really painful. If what's going is a loved one or our health or some wealth or something we don't want to lose, that can be really painful. Also, sometimes things can come in that we don't want. That's how impermanence is. Good news, sometimes things go that we really wish would go. They go sometimes. And things we really want, they come. That's the good side of impermanence. But the hard side is we lose things that we really love. And so there's suffering. And so in Buddhist practice, there's beautiful, the phrases, I care about this suffering. May I be free of this suffering. Or for others, I care about your suffering. May you be free of your suffering. It's a beautiful practice. And I just want to sing you a song that I wrote, We Do Vulnerable. I was on a meditation retreat at Vajrapani, which is a beautiful, rustic retreat center in the mountains outside Santa Cruz. Old growth redwoods. So on the lunch, right after the lunchtime, I was on a jog, going jogging, and I heard a sound off the path out in the redwoods, and I thought it was an electric saw. That's what it sounded like. And I thought, oh, my heart. And I thought, oh, no, someone's cutting down one of the old growth redwoods. So sad. Well, I think what I could do for this tree is go and witness it as it's being cut down. So I went off the path and down towards the sound in the forest. And I came to the sound, and it was not an electric saw. It's the sound that a deer makes when it's dying in distress. So I sat with the deer for many, many hours, and then I went back to my cabin and I wrote a song. And this is my song about compassion. When loving kindness meets suffering, it doesn't get angry, it doesn't go into denial, it doesn't divert attention, it doesn't hide out in addictions and distraction. When loving kindness meets suffering, it stays present. This song is called Every Living Thing is Vulnerable. Can you play it with no capo? Oh, never mind, you're good. Two capos. Created with care over thousands of years, beauty lurks in the eyes and the hooves of a deer. But beauty's not seen by a pack of dogs who pull you down into the stream. Now you lie in the creek, as still as the rocks. I watched you drown, and I did not stop you. You were on your way, and it seemed to me to be kinder than the man with the gun. But I sang for you, though you did. asking them to release your fear. Every living thing is vulnerable. I'm powerless to change that. Still I sing for you. The child comes to school all battered and bruised by our culture's obsession with things. Learning young not to look for peace in his heart, but in what the external world brings. Now you sit in the classroom, facing the wall, headed straight for disaster. We're letting you fall. You'll bring down a piece of our world when you go. So I offer you one of the life rafts I know, and I sing with you. Though you may not hear, we sing for your spirit. May it rise above fear. Every living thing is vulnerable. I'm powerless to change that. Still I sing with you. My mind runs wild as water, and the pain in me goes deep. Sometimes I lash out someone I love, or cry out in my sleep. If I hurt you, please forgive me. When I'm crying, will you hold me? When I'm dying, and on the day I die, will you sing for me? Though I may not hear, because if I do, you will comfort my fear. I don't care if you're in tune. The kindness in your voice comes through. Will you sing for every living thing is vulnerable? I'm powerless to change that. I will sing for you. So, bringing an energy of love into those suffering moments, I'm going to quickly share with you a practice. This comes from a book called, a new book that's out called Self-Compassion. I think the author is named Christina Neff. Does anybody know? Is that right? Oh, okay, good. So if we touch each other or ourselves, we release a certain amount of a beautiful chemical called oxytocin. And oxytocin is kind of a feel-good chemical, and it's released in its largest amounts when we make love or when mothers breastfeed. But we get them just from touch. And what's really interesting is that even if somebody else isn't touching you, you can offer it to yourself, this kind of touch, and release some oxytocin. And so the practice, and I'm just going to share it with you, and if you want to join me, you put your hands on your heart. And then there's three things you do. The first is acknowledge consciously, and this is when something hurts, whether a small, medium, or large something is hurting in our lives, which it will, because life has that in it. And so put our hand on our heart to release that oxytocin and offer ourselves some comfort. And first thing is to bring it into awareness and name it for what it is. This is a moment of suffering. So this is a moment of suffering. And then the second thing that you bring into your mind is this idea, suffering is a part of life. It's really important to realize there's nothing unique about a moment of suffering. We all have them. And when the part of the problem is when we're hurting and we think that we're somehow singled out for this kind of pain, and we're not. So this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is a part of life. And then the third thing is, may I hold myself in compassion. So I'm not asking to change it. It's just like, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, holding a crying child. That's all it is. It's the holding. It's not saying, be quiet. It's not saying, shutting the door. Just staying present with. It's short. It's a short, that's the whole practice. But I just wanted to offer it to you because I think it's really powerful. And so bringing the mindful awareness or attention to the suffering and then staying with. That's all it is. And yet it's super powerful. And that's what karuna, which is the Pali word for compassion, or compassion practice, is in our tradition in Buddhism. Okay, so we've done loving kindness and compassion. And the third one is called appreciative joy, and or mudita. And this is traditionally a practice where we bring in other people's joy. We meet other people's joy with loving kindness. And when you meet another person's joy with loving kindness, that is appreciative joy. That is like, yay for you. And our own heart opens up. Now, sad to say, this is the hardest, apparently, of the four to practice, because so often, because we don't get how interconnected we are, so often we think, oh, fooey, that person has this really good thing, that means I won't get it. Some kind of jealousy or envy is really common. The Dalai Lama says that if we really learn to practice this appreciative joy thing, we have our own joy. If we learn to practice appreciative joy, we could increase our joy by approximately 7 billion. Oh, could be worth looking into. Seriously, really learning to like, what the way I see it is, somebody who's doing well, really well, that's one less person for me to worry about. And that's a good thing, you know, because it's a good thing when someone's doing well, actually. It's a good thing. So that's a beautiful practice. And there are different phrases that we say. The one that I learned from Sylvia Boorstein is, may your happiness increase, may your happiness never cease. A phrase of well-wishing. So that's really beautiful. And then the one when we're in the context of unconditional self-love, it looks like gratitude. Gratitude for all our good fortune. Saint Francis of Assisi taught the Latin root word for gratitude, gratias, is the same word as the root word for grace. Gratitude and grace. And so his teaching was that when we are in a place of gratitude, we are opening to grace. And why is that? Is because we suddenly appreciate the cushion underneath. You know, isn't it great that we're sitting here and we're housed and we're warm enough, and I'm hoping that we're all relatively well fed. I hope we are. And you know, we're breathing this air, and there's not a war outside, and there's not an earthquake going on, and you know, it's luck that's good in this moment. A lot to be thankful for. Gratitude. And again, the present moment practice, which is what we learn here, really helps with gratitude. And because suddenly, the more you're aware of how all these things that we take for granted are really worth appreciating. And the more we're in gratitude, the more joy we have in our lives. So I want to share another song with you. This is called Given to You. I am breathing. I don't know why, but I know it's a gift. earth and sky, every exhale, every in-breath, the whole universe telling me, yes, I have this body, I travel in, sweet devoted companion, warm and spacious mystery, priceless gift bestowed to me. I cannot tell you why we're here, so broken and so lost. I do not understand the hate, daily grieve the cost, but I can say with confidence, because I clearly see this moment is a miracle given to you and me. Here's the sunshine, here's the breeze, feet on steps, legs lifting me. Some call it the plain, ordinary. Look close to see, it's amazing. Your bed, the grass, the birds, the cats, your car, your phone, your keys, the bay, the trees, your heart, your knees, your ears, listening to me. Whoa, I can say with confidence, because I clearly see this moment is a miracle given to you and me. This weary mind trying to find security in change, teach it to see the mystery in what we call mundane. The water from the faucet as it flows into your cup, the universe seizing another chance to love you up. Whoa, I can say with confidence, because I clearly see this moment is a miracle given to you and me, given to you. Do you see it's given to you and me, given to you. Thank you. Yeah, so there's a lot of joy to be found in this practice. Loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, gratitude. And finally, equanimity. So equanimity, we understand equanimity to be staying with the present, regardless of what's happening around us. Because things keep changing around us, so you know we can easily get swayed into thinking that things are a certain way, and they never are. And so just dropping down into this present place where there's actually a refuge right here in this moment. There's a refuge So we're not getting too wild and crazy when things are going great. We're not getting a big inflated ego. And we're not getting too lost in despair when things are going not great. Because we know there's this place to come back to. It's the simplicity of this body, the warmth of the sitting, the standing, the lying down, and the breathing inside the body. When I first started this practice, what drew me was the Dharma talks. I actually hated the meditation. I thought it was so boring, oh my God. But I loved the Dharma talks. So I just kept coming for the Dharma talks. And if I had to sit through a whole day to get to the Dharma talk, I would. You know, like when I was a little kid, there was these soaps. Do you ever have these kind of soaps that were like shaped like a bear and in the middle was some little plastic toy? I hated the having to wash my hands, but I would in order to get to the little plastic toy. That's how I felt about the Dharma talks. And meditation. But it took a long time for me to suddenly realize that, oh my gosh, I have this incredible friend with me all the time. It's my body. And then the breath inside my body, which is the place where my body is always connecting to everything around me. There's a sky and air in it that's keeping us alive all the time. And we can connect to that at any moment because it's always going on. And it's so soothing. Just this breathing. Our equanimity is coming back to that. When I'm an elementary school music teacher. And it's a blessed job. I love it. But all I tell you, about sometime every day, some kid is going to do something. I come back to the breath. Or there are bigger rocks of the boat than that, for sure. Or other times where, you know, it seems like my life is so blessed, I'm not even coming down on the ground. And come back to the breath. That's equanimity. So, we will do a little equanimity song. This is a song about Sand Makes a Pearl. This is a song about coming back to the present moment when things are challenging. Tender, surrounded by a shell, but this armor doesn't keep the sand out well. And with these grains in here, what are you gonna do? Will you curse the very water that you come from? Will you curse the very water that you live in? Will you curse this water? Sand everywhere, sand as far as the sea is blue, sand right here in the middle of you, sand in the middle is so much to be grateful for. Scraping and chafing and keeping you reaching out. Miracles all around, but this raw ache, nothing more than this right now. There's no mistake. Stay here, oh stay right here. Sand will make a pearl. No one to blame. The ocean is innocent. This is the sea. This is the scene. We were born in. If hiding and hating, contracting and blaming worked, we'd all been free long ago. It's not that the wise ones never hurt. It's that they know something we need to know. They're throwing a lifeline, saying stay in the present, knowing this moment and being kind is how we transcend it. Stay here, oh stay right here. Sand makes a burn. Stay right here, right now, with just what you've got. Sand will make a pearl. Is how we transcend it. Stay here, oh, stay right here. Sand makes a pearl. Yes, it does. Stay right here, right now, with just what you've got. Sand will make a pearl. So, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity directed toward yourself. Path to freedom. All right, we're going to end with dedication of merit. We meet here in the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery, is in the Mahayana tradition. But Reverend Hang Shur, who's the abbot here, is very much an interfaith practitioner and welcomes all kinds of things to his space here, to their space here. I love this space. I love all of these Buddhas around us. And we also have with us here Kuan Yin, and we don't talk about her a lot in the Theravadan tradition, but she's a bodhisattva. She represents compassion and wisdom. Is this Kuan Yin? Okay, so this is Kuan Yin. That's certainly how she sits. It's definitely her back there. So I've been looking at all of you, and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm getting a straight line of Kuan Yin right up here, too. So she. I just want to say a little bit about her in case you're interested in learning more about her. She started out as Avalokiteshvara in India, a male, always androgynous, but a male. There's a whole story, but came to represent both Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit and Kuan Yin in Mandarin mean the same thing, which is the one who hears the cries of the world. And then so in, I'm sure I have my dates, I don't have those papers with me, but I think it was like 300 AD, she came over to China, and within 300 years, Avalokiteshvara had become Kuan Yin, had become female, so she's a gender switcher, which I think is cool. And but still the same thing, the one who hears the cries of the world. And she's very big in the Pure Land tradition, which is Reverend Hang Shur's tradition. So you'll see her. She has her vase of healing liquid that she'll pour on your heart if you need it. You can invoke her. It's pretty cool. Anyway, when Reverend Hung Shur was going to be visiting, doing his interfaith work, and he went to go and visit a convent in the Midwest, they were going to have a big convention, and then a week before Hung Shur and the other monks arrived was the 9/11, the taking down of the towers. So most of the people canceled their trip for this interfaith convention, but Hung Shur went, and the woman who was the abbess of the convent asked Hung Shur if there was a way for them to sing the Dedication of Merit. Now, the Dedication of Merit is across all the Buddhist lineages how we like to end evenings where we come together in practice like this, because it's understood that we generate some really good energy and that we can offer it out to all beings who may need it. So in the Dedication of Merit, we take any good energy we may have generated within our own hearts and among ourselves and in this space, and we send it out to anyone I see, like a homeless person on the street or a child or some elder person alone in a old folk home. Send it out, this beautiful energy we have here. That's what Dedication of Merit does. So anyway, she asked for this song. So he didn't have a song. He just had a chant in Mandarin that they do in the Pure Land, in all over Asia, but especially in China and Taiwan. So he went off to one of the rooms there, and he translated it into English in a way that rhymes, but he had no tune. And then he was going on I forget if it was a walk or a bike ride, and it suddenly came to him that these words that he'd made from the Mandarin matched perfectly with a tune from a popular Irish folk singer named Lorena McKennett. And so he put these two things together and taught it to the sisters, and about 100 or 200 people gathered and just sang this over and over again, their Dedication of Merit. And he's been singing it all over the world since then. And he taught it to me. And I want to share it with you. And so in gratitude for this, for the generosity of the Pure Land people who share this beautiful space with us, and for you, and for all beings everywhere, this is a Dedication of Merit. One, two, three, four. May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may our minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave our grief and pain. May this boundless light ease the darkness of our endless night. Because all hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.